I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to The Hour of the Time. Well, folks, remember what we were talking about last night? I've got some more news for you. Seems that my sixth sense was absolutely correct. And I'll tell you what it's all about in just a moment. Well, ladies and gentlemen, one of the so-called investigators on the Tom Valentine show last night was Don Stewart. Don Stewart. We immediately sent out some faxes today, and I made some phone calls to get our people digging on this fellow. We ran some computer database searches. Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you with no reservations whatsoever that Don Stewart is a longtime informant for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. We can prove it, and he has admitted it in writing on several occasions. There's also an article in the, I believe it's the Sacramento Bee, which also makes the same statement. It didn't take us long to catch on to this guy. Don Stewart is a long-time paid informant for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. This is not a guess. It is a fact. We have documentation where he has admitted it himself. We also received faxes and communications today from people all over the country to whom Don Stewart has tried to sell illegal firearms to. This is what they tell me. And there's quite a few other things, but that's enough. I mean, that's all you need to know. So, you know, what really got me going was the fact that they said they were standing right there when McVeigh and John Doe number 2 were talking to Mark Kornke about blowing something up. And I happen to know that McVeigh and John Doe number 2 and other teams of people were traveling around the country talking about these things, trying to rope patriots into doing something with them. This was a sting operation. That's what made me suspicious. What were they doing there, and why were they eavesdropping? It also appears that Mr. Don Stewart may have on occasion worked for the Anti-Defamation League. Now let me give you a warning, folks. I don't screw around here. I'm not playing Little League. I'm playing in the big league, and I'm playing for keeps, and I've already stuck my butt out over the cliff so far, there is no coming back for me. So when you play games, I'm going to nail you on it. You see, because it's not just me, I'm not just one person. I have built over the years the world's largest and most successful civilian intelligence gathering organization that exists upon the face of this earth. If you're smart, you will never in your life have anything to do with Mr. Don Stewart. And you would certainly be one of the biggest fools in the world if you ever agreed to buy any kind of a weapon from him or from anybody who associates with him or knows him or anyone that he referred you to. Now I want to read you an article that was written by a friend of mine, Carol Valentine, which I think is very good. And it's entitled, I was going to run this in this issue of Veritas, but she wrote another article that goes along with our headline article that sort of balances it. And so this one got bumped, so I'm going to read it on the air. Armed March on Washington, America's Great Divide. Linda Thompson's announced Armed March on Washington provides a clean divide among the people who discuss it. Many people were either infuriated or horrified by the suggestion. The armed march on Washington is often a major talking point in efforts to discredit Mrs. Thompson, ever since she announced the plan in April 1994. Yet United States government armed services regularly march through the streets and crowds of Washington, D.C. The participants in these marches wear the colors of the government, draw their pay from the government, and are ultimately trusted with lethal force within the Capitol. Why should the march of a citizen army be condemned if the government has nothing to fear? And I added that if the government has nothing to fear. Carol Valentine did not write that phrase. But that's what she meant to say. I can tell you that. And so I added it. Whenever I do that, folks, I'll always tell you. The armed march on Washington is a good talking point, and it cuts to the heart of the issue. The issue is the relationship of the people to their government. On this subject, people fall into one of three groups. The first group are the royalists. Members of this group have no problem with military parades where the government's forces of mass destruction are paraded before the forcibly disarmed populace. On the subject of citizen militias, the royalist position is enunciated by M. Samuel Sherwood, founder and director, and possibly the only member, of the United States Militia Association. According to Mr. Sherwood, militias drilling with weapons would be totally inappropriate. We believe in county, city, and state militia units that have the charter sanction or approval of the sheriffs, county commissioners, or whoever the local political authority based upon law. That's a direct quote from Mr. Sherwood from The New American, February the 6th, 1995, page 29. Since the American Revolution of 1776 was illegal at the time, one may assume that Mr. Sherwood would have backed the legal authority then in existence. That is, he would have supported the ruling sovereign, King George III, and his duly appointed governors and military commanders. According to King George, all rights and power came to the king directly from God, and in his royal generosity, he licensed them out to his subjects to be enjoyed as long as they behaved themselves and did not displease King George. The second group who have an opinion on the armed march on Washington are the Chickenhearts. They know we live in an occupied Roman province, and they are terrified of the Roman Imperial Guard. They gnaw their knuckles when the armed march on Washington is mentioned and look around in fear of government eavesdroppers. The chicken hearts disapprove of the armed march on Washington because they believe the paranoid U.S. government would order soldiers to open fire on the marchers. Despite their full understanding of the nature of our current government, they are religiously and viscerally incapable of opposing it. Waco, the staged torture, murder, and burning to death of innocents, was designed for the chicken hearts as an object lesson. In their fear, the chicken hearts will betray those who seek independence. They are the perfect complement to King George, Tiberius Caesar, or any other tyrant who seeks utter subjugation of the people. In discussions of the armed march on Washington, there is a third group. We shall call this third group the inheritors of the American Revolution. They remember the words of the Declaration of Independence, quote, that to secure life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and institute new government. These people believe that government is created and sustained by the citizens to serve their purposes and may be abolished when it no longer pleases the citizens. To these people, a government is no more holy than any other organization of human labor. When she canceled the armed march on Washington, Mrs. Thompson published a statement in which she said that her purpose for announcing the march in the first place was tactical. Has anything, she asked, in the history of this country since the Revolutionary War mobilized so many citizens so quickly or so effectively or done so much to literally scare the absolute bejeebers of a tyrannical government as the public announcement that enough is enough, we the people are going to arrest the traitors and man the weapons? She says that the announcement of the march resulted in a broad realization that the government is not able to suppress large numbers of people. The government lacks the manpower and the training. They have stretched their assets in too many places. They know they cannot rely on the United States military to fire on United States citizens, nor can the United States government rely on United States nations troops who don't train well together, don't speak the same language, don't use the same signals or equipment, and overall work together like the Keystone Cops. It is only the United States government's propaganda machine that has some convinced the government is the great, all-powerful Oz. It was the march, she says, that forced people to ask the basic question, quote, just how many troops could they call up anyway, end quote. The answer was that we outnumber the SOBs 100-1 easily. Do we have government by the will of the government governed? Do we have government by the will of the governed? Does a truly Republican government have anything to fear from the people? Anything to fear even from an armed group of citizens marching through the nation's capital? The armed march on Washington has been a marvelous talking point. Other subjects provide a wealth of perspectives, some genuine, some crafted by spin doctors, but this subject provokes reactions that lay bare the very premises of a citizen's relationship to government. Looks like Linda Thompson is going to have to share the limelight with Carol Valentine, another woman who's got more guts than most men. Yeah, I'm talking to you, blubber belly, with the Budweiser in your hand. I said that one night, and a guy wrote me a letter, and he says, boy, you caught me with that one. I looked down at that Budweiser can and threw it out the window. He was a truck driver sitting in the passenger seat with a buddy of his. He was, I don't know where they were going, but I thought that was a little humorous. Now, in the last issue of Veritas, ladies and gentlemen, I pretty well proved the origin and the reality and the agenda of the IRS and the BATF. I also proved that the United States government has no authority, jurisdiction, or venue within the several states. And you know, a lot of people wrote me letters and said, you're full of baloney. Well, I'm not full of baloney. I'm absolutely correct. If you have a copy of the Constitution, read it. It says, Congress shall have the power to legislate in all cases. Now, the key to the power of Congress, ladies and gentlemen, is in the sentence that follows, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm going to force you to read your Constitution because generally you're too damn lazy to do it on your own. Read it. See what it says. In the meantime, I'll read you this court decision. You see, the Constitution is alive and well, so far. A decision had to be made by a federal court judge after a two-year wait this past March in 1995. But not one word has been printed in any magazine, any media, any newspaper, or any newsletter, except for Veritas. You see, this court case was sitting in Federal District Judge Randolph T. Randa, Wisconsin, for close to 2 years. It took a writ of mandamus issued to Judge Randa to rule on this case. 8 individuals were charged and 7 pleaded not guilty. The 8th, the brave heart, would not plead because he said the federal government did not have the jurisdiction to rule. After the writ was issued, Judge Randa ruled March 1995 that the federal government does not have jurisdiction within the several states except in those areas designated by the Constitution or in the powers granted by the Constitution over interstate commerce. The U.S. attorney who appealed this case stated that, quote, if this argument is allowed to prevail, half the jail cell doors in this country will have to swing open, end quote. And I say, hooray, swing them open, Bubba. You can also add in the actions by the Internal Revenue Service, just for starters. And in the last issue of Veritas, we proved by a court case, which we listed in Veritas, that the BATF only has jurisdiction over the first sale of a weapon imported into this country at the border and no place else. Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 17 of the United States Constitution says the Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever. And I'm going to make you read the rest of it. So that's the only way you ever really learn something, ladies and gentlemen. And I personally believe that every American in this country should read the Constitution from beginning to end once a week to themselves, to their family, and to their children. If you're not doing it, I urge you to begin. The research pleadings are available, ladies and gentlemen, in both hard copy and on computer disk, if you doubt my word. Contact Gene Zimmerman at this number. It's also his fax number, 414-644-7640. That's 414-644-7640. If you didn't get it, don't call and ask for it. Buy the tape and help support this broadcast. Cult Awareness Network has just been adjudged penalties of $5 million for kidnapping. I love it. Galen Kelly, one of the Cult Awareness Network deprogrammers, was found guilty of kidnapping last year and sentenced to prison. Rick Ross just lost a civil suit for practicing Cult Awareness Network's version of human rights, which is really nothing more than kidnapping. I never could figure out how, if I went and kidnapped somebody's kid and took them someplace against their will, I could go to jail for the rest of my life or even be fried in the electric chair if I took the kid across the state line. But these jerks from the Cult Awareness Network for years have been kidnapping people's children, taking them across state lines, and they call it deprogramming. Well, the law is catching up to them, ladies and gentlemen. A young man taken from his home by religious deprogrammers who tried to persuade him to leave the United Pentecostal Church has been awarded $5 million by a federal court jury. Jason Scott, now 23, had sued nationally known cult awareness network Rick Ross and the Cult Awareness Network, a Chicago-based group that monitors so-called cults. You know what a cult is, folks? It's a religious organization that nobody else agrees with. And you better watch out. There's a lot of people who would like to call your religion a cult, and in many cases already do. The jury deliberated 8 hours before finding Friday, September the 29th, 1995, that the defendants deprived Scott of his civil right to freedom of religion. The award included $875,000 in damages and $4 million in punitive damages. Judge John Conower termed the verdict quite reasonable. How do you like that? I love it. I think it is absolutely, incredibly wonderful that that is happening. And here's something. The UFO factor. There's a volume reversal survey, a market newsletter. And the editor's name is Mark Leibovitz. He says in last week's issue that the United States of America's secret government, which Leibovitz theorizes is preparing for a secret military attack on U.S. citizens in Arizona, Idaho, and Montana, also asserts that the government for 50 years has kept secrets about UFOs and alien beings on Earth, and that the secret may not hold much longer. He says, and I quote, "Some say Clinton is threatening to come out with the alien story if he is hounded any further on Whitewater." Leibovitz writes, quote, "One or more of these events could be enough to send the financial markets into a panic," end quote. In an interview, Leibovitz said his conspiracy theories aren't central to his investment strategy, but he's bearish on stocks anyway. Quote, "We may be in a topping phase now and starting a multi-year bear market," end quote, he says. "These things may not come to fruition for 10 years, but the day they do, if you're in the market, forget it." For what it's worth. Well, for all of you naysayers, foreign troops in the United States, oh, you must be one of those conspiracy freako whacked out dudes. Hey man, you got a joint? According to a news story in the Wednesday, October the 11th, 1995 issue of the Daily Oklahoman, Oklahoma City newspaper, 250 Russian troops will be participating in joint peacekeeping exercises with United States soldiers at Fort Riley, Kansas. Russia will send 250 Army soldiers to Fort Riley, Kansas on October the 23rd for 2 weeks of joint peacekeeping exercises with 250 United States soldiers, the Defense Department said Tuesday. Pentagon spokesman Ken Bacon told reporters the troops will practice such peacekeeping duties as, quote, "checkpoint operation, conducting patrols, reacting to civil disturbances, escorting convoys, landmine awareness, and conducting air movement operations," end quote. Don't it just make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside to know that Russian troops are training here to react to civil disturbances?
The law forbids American military from participating. Doesn't say anything about Russians.
And you doubt the capabilities of implant technology? This story from England. Fish and game experts in Great Britain use some of the world's most sophisticated technology to study wildlife there, often producing some real learning surprises in terms of speed and range. But even relatively unruffable officials were shocked
when a salmon they were tracking suddenly displayed unheard-of maneuverability. An English agent's eyes almost popped when an 8-pound salmon, fitted with a microchip tracking device, suddenly lit up his screen by leaping high in the air, scaling a steep riverbank, then racing straight across the Wales countryside to the middle of a small town. When the blip stopped moving, the game wardens got into gear and sped off to find this amazing specimen of Salmonidae. Then they may have been disappointed to learn the fish didn't achieve these marvelous feats on its own power, but at least had the satisfaction of arresting Paul Williams, age 19, for poaching. The fish and game agents found Wonderfish dead on Williams' kitchen table in the company of 3 other salmon. They didn't tell Williams which one snitched him off. The same kind of tracking technology is in limited use in the United States, although we haven't yet heard reports of a white-tailed deer taking the Elko en route to I-80, then averaging 72 miles per hour all the way to Reno, Nevada, have we? By the way, the story appeared in American Handgunner, November-December 1995, page 99. And here's one for you to tell you how far we've gone down the hill. This is from AEN News. In Santa Cruz, California, a clown named Twister was arrested. Guess what he was arrested for, folks? He was putting coins in parking meters to save people from getting a ticket and getting fines if the meter were about to expire. Many local people in that area, of course, are active in support of Twister the Clown, and others have started imitating him, putting a coin in a meter if they notice that it is close to expiring. Well, why did they arrest Twister? Seems that he is cutting the city off from a lot of revenue-generating activity. I suggest that everybody do this. Every time you see a parking meter about to expire, put a quarter in it. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a great nonviolent rebellion. And by golly, that ought to make the city council sit up and take notice. You'll begin to empty their coffers. This is worth imitating nationwide, folks. No blame if you don't want to participate. It's not a duty, but it certainly would be wonderful if you did. And it'd be a good deed for somebody who maybe just got caught up and couldn't get back to the parking meter in time. So, basically, the truth about the prosecution of Twister the clown, being prosecuted by the Crown, is neighborliness, community spirit, kindness, charity, helping the people he lives among. Now, what kind of establishment is terrified of those kinds of values reappearing in the United States of America? Who would arrest someone for putting a quarter or a nickel or a dime in a parking meter to save somebody from getting a ticket? If you're as angry at these jerks as most of us are, here's a way to express it nonviolently and perhaps make a bigger wave as in the 60s. Just put something in the parking meter when you go by and you see it's almost ready to expire. Don't put it in there if it's not ready to expire, just if it's ready to expire. Be alert. Watch. Do it. I think it's wonderful. And I think that Twister the Clown ought to get a medal for that. United Nations flag raising ceremony in Lansing, Michigan, that I've announced several times on this broadcast. It's going to be at, be there at 9 a.m., folks. They've changed the time on it. Be there at 9 a.m. Tuesday, October the 24th, 1995, downtown Lansing, Michigan, by City Hall. Bring your gas mask. The mayor has threatened to gas the crowd if anybody demonstrates. Whether peaceful or not, he didn't make any clarification. He just said he's going to gas them. Excuse me, folks, I had to sneeze there. The area in front of Lansing City Hall will be roped off and closed by at least 9:45 a.m., 24th October 95. This is what they're saying. I'm telling you to be there at 9. The United Nations spokesperson advised that supporters be present no later than 9:15 a.m., 24th October 95. So what they're going to do is they're going to have their ceremony, and whoever shows up at 10 o'clock is going to be too late. So be there at 9 a.m. A parade permit, folks, has been obtained by individuals wishing to gather in opposition to this ceremony. But sources within the Lansing establishment report that the mayor is preparing to order police to attack protesters with gas. Now, we don't know what that means. Pepper gas? CS gas? Tear gas? Unleaded gas? If you'd like to protest by phone because you can't get there, and I'm urging you, if you can, be there, be there. And if anything happens, folks, please, please do not hurt any person or any person's property. Don't hurt anybody. Don't hurt anybody's property. The number of the Lansing mayor is 517-483. 517-483-4141. 517-483-4141. Tell him what a jerk you think he is for threatening people with gas. 517-483-4141. The city council is 517-483-4177. That's 517-483-4177. Governor Engler, the governor of Michigan, 517-373-3400. That's 517-373-3400. Lansing City Police Department, 517-483-4600. That's the Lansing City Police Department, 517-483-4600. Call them, tell them we don't need a Gestapo with gas attacking peaceful protesters. The Ingham County Sheriff, 517-676-2431. That's 517-676-2431. And the State Journal, which is the newspaper, 517-377-1000. That's 517-377-1000. Remember, Tuesday, October 24th, 9 a.m., downtown Lansing, Michigan, by the City Hall. Also, there's a United Nations flag, ladies and gentlemen, flying at the New York University Medical Center, 430 First Avenue and 30th Street in New York City. As the United Nations flag is now flying at New York University Medical Center, 530 First Avenue and 30th Street in New York City. And those of you who live in New York, take care of business. Also, on the 50th anniversary of the United Nations in Gainesville, Florida, they plan to hoist the United Nations flag over City Hall. If you live in Gainesville, Florida, or anywhere near there, get together and take care of business. This is the United States of America. This is not a country called the United Nations. And if we have anything to do with it, never will be until they start telling us the truth, include us in the plans, and put before the American people for adoption. Whatever constitutions or charters or whatever they want for this world government. You see, folks, like I've always told you, I'm not against world government if it's done properly. If it recognizes and protects the creator-endowed rights of each individual. But they're not doing anything like that. They're lying, deceiving, and manipulating. Because it's not going to have anything to do with individual rights. Or any other kind of rights. They're going to be privileges which can be granted or taken away at will by the state.
Think about it. And if I were you, I would think very hard about it, ladies and gentlemen. Get those flags down and keep them down. And anybody that insists upon putting them up, get them out of office and keep them out of office and put Americans in office for mayor, city council, and yes, even dog catcher. Folks, tonight, you know what I've got? I've got a gold, $20 gold piece in one hand and a silver dollar in the other hand. I love it. You see, I've been preparing for a long time. I don't keep this stuff around here, but every once in a while, I'll go where it's at and bring a couple home just to hold and talk about while I'm doing the broadcast. Sort of connects me with the reality of the whole thing. Have your children ever seen a real silver dollar or a gold coin? Don't you think you should start educating them in the truth of what money is all about and about the Constitution and the law and why we keep getting poorer and poorer in the most opportunity-featured nation in the world? Don't you think they should at least get a chance to see one? Don't you think you should get a chance to hold some of these things in your hand and be able to feel it and look at it and know that at least a part of what you have worked for all your life is safe in that coin? Well, if you would, you can get some real money, some real silver dollars, some real gold coins of whatever type you wish, or you can get bullion if you want that, by calling our sponsor, Swiss America Trading. And I urge you to do that. Talk to any one of the good people there, Gene Miller. Gene spent an awful lot of time with me and with this broadcast, so I urge you to call Gene. But all of the people there are excellent people, and they'll all help you. And if they don't treat you right, call me. I'll take care of that. I'm your ombudsman. So call 1-800-289-2646. Put a gold coin in your hand. Put a silver dollar in your child's hand. And then switch him. Watch the look on his face. And if I was there, I'd be watching the look on your face. That would give me great pleasure as you finally connected with reality. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be so happy that that great weight has been taken off of your shoulders. 1-800-289-2646. So, folks, another surprise for you. We have located a videotape that shows Gary Hunt with a BATF t-shirt on, standing with two other BATF agents also wearing the same t-shirt. Remember, I told you we also have a videotape, and you have it too if you have Waco the Big Live. Gary Hunt serving as the pallbearer for the funeral of an ATF agent. Not to disparage the dead ATF agent. I have no idea how he died or what the circumstances were, and I don't want to see anybody die. But nevertheless, it's Gary Hunt serving as the pallbearer. Hyder, Arizona. Well, there are some people out there who do listen to me. Listen to everyone. Read everything. Believe nothing unless you check it out for yourself. He sent me this. He said, listen to Bill Cooper last night on the shortwave. He stated that the slips of paper found at the crash site were never really there. The gist of what he was saying, that the media has created this bogus story about these papers, and this is another lie. I called information this morning for the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. When asked about the slips of paper not being found at the crash site, the woman answering would not comment and said all questions were to be directed to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. What's the FBI number, please? I asked. She gave it to me. So I called the FBI number and was referred to the investigator's office. A lady answered. Could you comment on the fact that there were no slips of paper found at the crash site of the Amtrak train derailment? She said she could not comment. Could someone else there, like a supervisor or investigator, comment then, I asked? She turned to someone and said, can we comment on the fact of the slips of paper not being found at the crash site? A man's voice replied, no, we cannot comment on that. The only one that can do that is the media officer. Well, is he there? No, he's at the crash site, she replied. Can I call later when he returns? I don't know when that will be, she replied. I then thanked her and hung up. This is my conversation of about half an hour ago with him and is to the best of my recollection. Call the numbers for yourself. Check it out like Cooper says. Don't just take his word or mine for it. So there you have it. Another bogus story by the media, designed to inflame and arouse the passions of the sheeple. Fact is, like Cooper reported it, no slips of paper signed by the sons of the Gestapo. I love it when you people do what you're supposed to do. This guy did it. Also, folks, hate to tell you this, but this comes from New York. Just on the news, an unmanned weather instruments tower at New York's LaGuardia Airport was bombed. No injuries and no loss to air safety. A note was found with a swastika on it. Wow. And you want to know what the Associated Press is saying is in the Hyder letter? By the way, most of the bullshit that's ever printed in this country comes from the Associated Press. Here's what they say was found at the Amtrak site. Indictment, and I'm quoting directly, I'm reading this text that they say was on all of these pieces of paper that were scattered all over this train wreck site. Quote, indictment of the ATF and FBI. Before dawn, the women awoke to say their morning prayers. The women slept upstairs. They lit their kerosene lamps because the electricity had been turned off by the FBI. After observing lights in all the upstairs windows, the FBI ordered the tear gas bombardment. Afterwards, only two upstairs windows were lit. The location of each was recorded. Over the next few hours, ventilation holes were poked in the walls. These holes made the fire burn very much faster. Otherwise, the fire department would have had time to put out the fire before the women and children died in the flames. At noon, the light from the two kerosene lamps was obscured by bright sunlight. Everyone had forgotten about them except the man who carried their locations written on a scrap of paper in his pocket. He ordered the tank drivers where to crash through, guess under which two windows. He ordered them to raise their guns as they backed out. The guns were lowered. The videotape shows clearly the floor being raised by the, and the word is unintelligible, a foot and a half. Guess what happened to the kerosene lamps? Word unintelligible. Rooms above the tanks. A minute afterwards, black smoke started to pour out of the windows where the lamps had burned. This is the normal time needed for a kerosene fire to build up. Who is policing the ATF, FBI, state troopers, county sheriffs, and local police? What federal law enforcement agency investigates each and every chokehold killing committed by a police officer? Each and every beating of a drunk, whether or not passerby videotapes it? Each and every shooting of a police officer's wife who knows too much about drug kickbacks? Each and every killing at Ruby Ridge? The Gestapo accounts to no one. This is not Nazi Germany. All these people had rights. It is time for an independent federal agency to police the law enforcement agencies and other government employees, sons of the Gestapo, and then separate SOG. Now, I don't know whether that's really what they found down there or if they really found anything. All I know is that that day when we called the sheriff and we called the FBI, they said there were no notes found at the train site. The next day, the Associated Press swore that the sheriff told him the notes were found and gave them the text of the note. The sheriff now will not comment, and the FBI will not comment. But you heard what the young gentleman who called the FBI heard over the phone. Now listen to this, by John Hiscock in Los Angeles and Charles Lawrence in New York. Listen to this. Domestic terrorism is a clear and present danger to the people. FBI agents searching for the sons of Gestapo terrorists who derailed a train in the Arizona desert believe they may be an offshoot of one of the dozens of white extremist and paramilitary groups based in the state. And I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that that is total, utter, drivel, absolute nonsense, fantasy bullshit. Totally made up by these people. Invented propaganda from the socialist communist news networks. Listen to this. Arizona has long been a refuge for anti-government and militia organizations who train in the sparsely inhabited desert regions. Klan Watch, which tracks hate groups, lists 47 white supremacist groups and 22 militia and paramilitary organizations operating in the state. They include various neo-Nazi groups, such as the Aryan Nations and the National Alliance. Now, folks, I'm in touch with most of the patriots and all of the militias in the state through my people. I don't know of, nor do I know, any neo-Nazi groups, any Aryan Nation people, anybody from the National Alliance, although I get hate mail on a regular basis from the National Alliance. I don't know any white supremacist groups. And I don't know any paramilitary organizations or hate groups. I know a lot of good Americans. And I know that there are quite a few good militia groups in Arizona, probably the best in the country. And it goes on and on and on. I'm not going to read all of it to you because it's all the same puke pouring out of these people's mouth. They are the haters, ladies and gentlemen. They are the Nazis. Hermann Goebbels would be so proud of them. They would all get medals if this were Nazi Germany. Now, check this out, folks. The president is assigning United States troops under the United Nations all the time. Specialist Michael News unit left without him. 22 United States Code, Section 287D, which on its face authorizes U.S. troops in U.N. military activities, never mind that's illegal, and I'm going to tell you why in a minute. Section 287D, Use of Armed Forces Limitations, the President is authorized to negotiate a special agreement or agreements with the Security Council, which shall be subject to the approval of the Congress by appropriate act or joint resolution, providing for the numbers and types of armed forces, their degree of readiness and general location, and the nature of facilities and assistance, including rights of passage to be made available to the Security Council on its call for the purpose of maintaining international peace and security in accordance with Article 43 of said charter. Remember that. Article 43 of said charter. The law says, in accordance with Article 43 of said charter. Talking about the United Nations Charter. Remember that. Don't forget it. It continues. The President shall not be deemed to require the authorization of the Congress to make available to the Security Council on its call in order to take action under Article 42 of said charter and pursuant to such special agreement or agreements the armed forces, facilities, or assistance provided for therein. Provided that except as authorized in Section 287(d)(1) of this title, nothing herein contained shall be construed as an authorization to the President by the Congress to make available to the Security Council for such purpose armed forces, facilities, or assistance in addition to the forces, facilities, and assistance provided for in such special agreement or agreements. Now, the agreement or agreements specifically must be made under Article 43, ladies and gentlemen. Article 43 is the one that can do it. And the President is doing it, citing Article 43. And the President is lying to you. Lying to you. Lying to you. As in liar. L-I-A-R. Liar. Liar. Your pants on fire. Your nose is as long as a telephone wire. You see, ladies and gentlemen, Article 43 of the Charter and Article 42 of the Charter referred to in text are articles of the United Nations Charter. And it all sounds really neat, and it really sounds, you know, like he has the authorization to do this stuff, and most of the sheeple would never check and would go right along with it, and that's what they count on. But you know what, folks? The United States of America has never in its history ratified Article 43 of the United Nations Charter. And several attempts to do so have failed. Therefore, this entire section of the United States Code has no legal position and, in fact, is not law and cannot be activated. Without the United States' ratification of Article 43 of the United Nations Charter, the President of the United States cannot assign United States military forces under the United Nations. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Guarantee you, it's addictive. Also, within the past few months, three members of the Supreme Court have met secretly with the High Justices of the World Court under the United Nations. And it is beginning to emerge as a pattern. President Clinton has just called for the creation of a permanent international criminal court in a speech on Sunday, October the 15th, at the University of Connecticut. He wants this court to be established with the support of the United Nations Security Council, a sentiment put forth in the World Federalist Association's November 1994 newsletter. The World Federalist Association stated that their goal was to have this court created and up and running by 1996. Does this mean Clinton is willing to further cede sovereign Americans' freedom to a force that would have jurisdiction in every city, county, and state in this country? Could they come into the United States and drag citizens to another country and try them in the United Nations court and put them in jail? The answer, ladies and gentlemen, is yes. And I think that's just about enough for one night, don't you? You think I've rattled your cage enough for tonight? I hope so. But you see, I happen to know that you can take it The audience of this broadcast is the best, most well-educated, smartest, most intelligent audience in the world. They are Americans who understand what it is to be an American. They understand the principles and ideals upon which this nation was based. They know what liberty means. They do not discriminate against people because of their race or religion, because that would take away liberty and flies in the face of liberty. And in my estimation, they are the salt of the earth. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. And God bless each and every single one of you.